Now we're joined by the experts at Vettafi, a new data analytics and thought leadership company that is transforming financial services from an industry to a community, one relationship at a time.
This is a challenging time, probably the most challenging in 30 years. Coming out of the financial crisis, $600 billion in ETF assets. They're starting to understand that there's more opportunity outside of those major market indexes.
Tom, how have you been? Welcome back to the podcast.
Hey, Nate. How are you doing? Looking forward to this today.
This is going to be fun. And I got to tell you, I bet there were more than, 30 survey questions that you sent me over. There were a ton of topics here. And so what I did is I just try to select some that piqued my interest and I thought were most relevant with everything going on. And certainly there's no shortage of things happening in the markets right now. But I guess first, as usual, do you want to explain where these questions and this data comes from?
Yeah, Nate, you know, at Vettafi, so we're the legacy ETF trends, ETF database, advisor perspectives. We've got hundreds of thousands of advisors over the course of the year coming to the sites. But the great thing is, based on the ticker symbols they look up, the strategies, the channels that they go to, specific articles, we can actually see from advisor behavior what they're most interested in learning about today. So it's not just individual ETF strategies, it's themes, it's the markets, it's the economies. And all that drives more of the data that advisors are looking for. And all that drives the content in things not like written stories, but also webcasts. So when we're on webcasts and thousands of advisors are on webcasts every month, we have the ability real time to get their feedback on how they feel about markets, strategy, portfolio construction, economy. And that's really what I shared with you yesterday. And I can picture, you know, you being a little bit in having a struggle between how much fun you're having with this and watching the golf tournament.
No, you know what? I could we could do a 3-hour long podcast on all the different survey questions. I think, you know, I've mentioned this in the past. I just love data like this because I think it's sometimes hard to really get a window into how advisors are actually thinking. You know, we all read a lot of different stories in the media, and, you know, there's different research papers and this and that. But this is really, you're hearing from the horse's mouth as to how, you know, how they're thinking. And so I just love this stuff. And so what I thought we would do, like last time, is I'll offer up the poll question and give the results. And then perhaps you can offer some color and we can just bat these around a little bit. Look, first up, a hot topic recently is the top heaviness of the market right now, right? Where a handful of mega cap growth companies are providing all of the returns in the S&P 500. And I don't know if you saw this. I actually tweeted out a stat from the Wall Street Journal on Sunday. So the S&P 500 is up 12% this year, but it would be negative without the contribution of seven large tech companies. And so with that in mind, the first question that I flagged was this. The question was, what is your opinion of an equal weight investment approach? And over 52% of respondents said they would consider investing in a fund or portfolio that equally weights all positions. 35% said they would prefer to weight positions based on other criteria, so market cap, sector exposure, et cetera. And then the remaining 12 to 13% said they would not consider an equal weight approach when constructing an investment portfolio. But Tom, the majority did say they would consider equal weighting right now. And I'm really curious to hear your thoughts here, because if you would have had an equal weighted approach coming into the year, let's just say in the S&P 500, you would have underperformed. I look, the Invesco S&P 500 equal weight ETF, ticker RSP, that's only up a little over 2%, again, compared to the S&P 500, which is up over 12%. But the question is, what do you think about equal weighting moving forward?
Well, so a great example is RSP, which is the Invesco equal weight 500 ETF, just had its 20-year anniversary. And historically, over time, equal weight outperforms the cap-weighted strategy. But as you know, coming out of the financial crisis, there was a handful of tech companies that garnered most of the gain. And those old FANG stocks that we call, now there are a few more that are added to that, the seven or eight that you highlight now, they have been the majority of the game. The big fear that most advisors have today is having so much concentration as their portfolios are highly correlated to the S&P 500. Yes, it's great to have that on the upside, but as we'll talk about in a little bit, market volatility is the biggest concern of most of the clients out there today. So spreading that, diversifying that over time, although it doesn't feel the greatest right now, will probably work well. And you know what you want to do is make sure that if something's really hot, that you somewhat stay away from that so you can diversify. And that's really key and critical.
Yeah, my take on this, I think it really just depends on how you view the world, because I think you can make the argument that what we've seen this year with a handful of companies carrying returns, well, that's exactly why you should take a market cap weighted approach, right? You get that benefit, and we've seen it in the past. On the other hand, I do think it's hard not to think about risk management right now, right? When you see a stock like NVIDIA doing what it's doing. And so maybe that sounds like I'm deflecting a little bit, but I always come back to, as an investor, what can you stick with? And if you look at RSP, you know, the risk return profile that in my mind is much more like mid-cap stock exposure. I'm not saying that's good or bad. You just have to be prepared for periods of underperformance like we've seen this year. But again, moving forward, maybe that's a better way to manage risk in a portfolio. So I go back and forth on this. I come back with, again, what can you stick with as an investor? And I guess related, Tom, you know, the next question that I flagged was, I thought right along with what we're talking about here, because the question was, what are you most concerned about for the next 12 months? And obviously, based on whatever you're concerned about, it's going to help drive what's in your portfolio and then whether you can stick with it. So let me give the results here. 40% said they were most concerned about a recession. About 24% said market valuations, 16% inflation, 13% geopolitical tensions, and then there were a couple of other answers as well. But if you look at the S&P 500 right now, the forward price to earnings ratio is about 18.5, which is above the 25-year average of 16.8. I pulled that from JP Morgan. Now, of course, those earnings depend on what happens over the next year, right? And so if we do get a recession, certainly that could negatively impact earnings, and maybe these valuations look even worse. But my question for you here is, any thoughts on where stocks are valued right now? Because again, I think that plays into the type of approach you might take in a portfolio on the equity side.
Yeah. So Nate, one thing you touched on earlier is advisors are with it. They're into it and they're real time making decisions. You know, 6 or 8 months ago, their biggest concern was inflation. Today, they think that the Fed's done a good job and they have it under control. So they are concerned about valuations. They're concerned about market volatility, for sure. But back to those 8 stocks, with them setting the PE ratio of the S&P 500 almost twice what the Russell 2000 is, they just haven't seen that in a long period of time. So they're going to be attracted more towards diversification, not just in large cap, but mid and small. And then you look at valuations overseas, we're seeing money flowing into international markets like we haven't seen in a long period of time. They're smart. Advisors are smart and they're not getting caught up in the hype. That hype in those 8 stocks is something that we see on CNBC every day, all day long. But they can come and bite you really quickly as well. And they know that. So the conversations that they're having with clients is, continue to diversify, continue to not pay too much for stocks. And yes, we may see a recession, but as you know, there are a lot of periods of time when recessions actually weren't that bad for the market because valuations were right, because you could actually buy stocks for cheaper prices, and the recessions weren't deep enough to cut earnings that much. It was actually some of these slight recessions that we've seen are actually been okay for the market.
I don't want to get off topic here, but when you look at valuations, I'm seeing a lot of chatter right now. I'm seeing charts out on Twitter regarding the spread between large cap, primarily large cap growth, and then small caps, and maybe small cap value in particular. Any thoughts on small cap stocks? Because again, I just see a lot more chat around there around this. But again, if we get into a recession, you know, are small caps where you want to be? Maybe that's why they're valued where they're at. But I just see a lot of chatter around small caps right now.
Yeah, I did a webcast last week with a couple of the portfolio managers from Dimensional. We specifically talked about small caps U.S., small cap international. And these guys have been around for a while. They said they just don't remember seeing the disparity in valuations that they've seen recently, which says, you know, it doesn't mean that all of a sudden things are going to catch up. But the odds are so much in your favor. And again, back to diversification, you don't want to find that a year from now when small caps catch up that you say shoulda, coulda, woulda. You know, that's, I think, when you see most of these advisors that are really smart these days and taking advantage of these valuations and diversification are doing the right thing for their clients.
Yeah, no question. It comes back to diversification. I think what scares some advisors away from small caps right now is just the number of companies with little or no earnings. And again, these concerns that if we do get a recession, maybe those companies would feel it the worst. But again, certainly small cap value, that looks much more attractive than large cap growth from a valuation perspective. So I think that's going to be interesting to watch here over the next year or so. And I guess speaking of the next year or so, the next polling question sort of sticks with that theme. And again, Tom, I just love getting data like this because it's such a window into how advisors are thinking right now. And the question was, do you plan to make adjustments to client portfolios for the second half of 2023? Now, 44% said no, they don't plan to make any changes. But 24% said yes, they plan to take money out of equities and allocate to fixed income. And then 16% had the inverse of that, that they plan to take money out of fixed income and allocate to equities. And then the remainder was a mix of taking positions in commodities, alternatives, or other asset classes, or just moving to cash altogether. But the largest portion of respondents, while they aren't doing anything, the second largest contingent is moving money out of stocks and into fixed income, which probably gets back into these concerns around a recession. Did that stand out to you at all? I'm curious what you thought of that one.
Well, it did, Nate. And just yesterday, Tom Hendrickson and I were looking at recent interest among advisors, specifically to tickers. And the ticker symbol lookup on fixed income U.S. to corporates more than doubled just in the last 30 days. So what does that tell you? There's more interest there, and these polling questions support that. In addition, which is unbelievable, we're seeing a huge increase in interest, and you're starting to see flows that support this as well, towards global fixed income, international fixed income, with the idea, if you focus in on why, now a lot of advisors are feeling like the Fed may have one more rate hike in them, but a year from now, we're going to have lower rates. If we have lower rates a year from now, they're comfortable going a little bit longer duration and a little bit less credit quality coming outside of short-term treasuries, even though they're paying 5%. That 5% is not going to be available a year from now. And if you go treasuries to corporates or even in high yields in some situations, not only can you support those higher yields, but actually have some appreciation if rates start to come down a bit. Real good strategy decisions, especially as a lot of folks took money off the table in the fixed income area of their allocation for clients, and really getting back to the traditional 60-40.
I'm really glad you flagged this topic of duration in bonds, because out of the 30-plus questions you sent me, I flagged a polling question. Yeah, let me read this. So the question was, what are your views on duration for fixed income? And 37% said they have begun to reduce their underweight. In other words, take on duration. 33% said still too early. But then 31% said rates have peaked, so I'd go long duration. So you add that all together. I mean, you're talking, 67, 68% are saying that they're either, reducing that underweight, so taking on duration risk, or just like going all in, going long duration. And, you know, if you do think rates have peaked, obviously you want to take on that duration. And we're seeing that in flows. Like, literally, the top ETF in inflows this year is the iShares 20-plus year Treasury bond ETF, ticker TLT. Tom, that thing has over $10 billion in inflows. And obviously, that's taking on duration risk. I mean, the effective duration there is, what, over 17. So that's another one. You know, I've talked a lot about over the past couple of months, this barbell approach, where we know we can look at the flows again. We know a lot of advisors are parking on the front end of the curve because, look, if you can scoop up 5.5%, you know, pretty much risk free with everything else going on, that's not a bad proposition. But if you do think we're going to get into a recession and you want to have a little bit of a hedge in a portfolio, maybe you take on that duration risk and look to an ETF like TLT. I don't know if you have any additional thoughts on that.
Yeah, I think a lot of advisors, even though they say they're not market timers, raise cash, especially in the fixed income portion of their portfolio in the last couple of years. So they're sitting on the sidelines, powder dry, and you know, Nate, you're getting paid for it now, which is great. Money market funds are actually paying something and it's worthwhile. However, they know that this is probably short-lived. So they're smart. And when you see the flows that are coming into longer duration, it's because all this money has been on the sidelines and they're starting to push it back in. And I think this trend's going to continue because once there's evidence that the Fed is in fact done, the question still, they're not sure. Half advisors feel they're done. The other half of advisors in general feel there's one more rate hike. But when that final rate hike's in, you're going to start to see more money going into longer duration. And if we start to see inflation more under control, rates start pulling back, this may be a run that we have for a period of time, which would be really healthy for portfolios and also make advisors look really good as they've gone through a tough period of time in the markets, both in equities and fixed income in the last couple of years.
Which, with you saying that, I have to go back to the question regarding whether advisors plan to make any adjustments to client portfolios for the second half of 2023. One of the responses, which I alluded to, was that there's some advisors that plan to move to all cash. So 4% said they plan to move to all cash. I would just say good luck with that because, hey, yeah. If you're right, you're going to look like an absolute hero. But if you're wrong, I don't know that I'd want to be in your shoes. But, Tom, if we pull this all together on the portfolio time, and you noted this earlier that, you know, probably the biggest goal of advisors right now is to manage volatility in a portfolio. And so you had a poll question which asked, my biggest goal for clients over the next 6 months is to, and the responses were, 60% said mitigate their exposure to market volatility and downside risk. 26% said bolster their portfolios against recession. 9% said protect them against rising rates. And then 5% said tax loss harvest for their benefit. But again, that 60% plus mitigate exposure to market volatility and downside risk. And by the way, when I saw that response, you know, the first thing that popped in my head was defined outcome ETFs. Like, it makes perfect sense why defined outcome ETFs are doing so well and why we're seeing so many of those come to market from different issuers. But any other comments you would add to that? Again, you mentioned that earlier, but maybe talk about this goal of advisors to manage volatility in a portfolio right now.
Well, we know we can do that by diversifying more. Going up until 2 years ago, the average advisor wasn't as diversified. They didn't have as much outside the U.S. and had a super high weighting in large cap stocks. I think they also are pretty flexible. Although most advisors say they're not market timers, we've had polls that say between 60 and 65% use some type of timing strategy in their portfolio allocation. And you could just see with the flows that in fact was the case. Okay. So here we are, fast forward to today. They feel like rates are going to be stabilized. They feel like there's going to be a recession. However, the recession isn't going to be as harsh. So if there is a soft landing and there's valuation out there outside a large cap, especially those eight big mega cap companies, it just begs for diversification. And if in fact we get that, and you know, Nate, you and I have talked about this before, that period of time historically, between the last rate hike and the first rate cut, usually is really, really good for the market, and advisors know that. They just don't want to be flat-footed there. They want to make sure that they are putting money to work. And although they don't want that volatility, they feel like if they're staying outside of those volatile tech stocks, that it's not going to be as volatile for them and their clients will be better. But look, you know, as an advisor, it's not easy these days. These past couple of years, if you've been a financial advisor, you've been challenged. And, you know, Nate, you've earned your stripes.
Well, you know what? I'm catching a theme from you this morning, diversification. So you're telling me the time-tested practice of diversifying a portfolio still works?
Well, more than ever, and you haven't been paid for it, you know, in the last 5 or 10 years. But I think eventually the pendulum swings. Just like, you know, when we look at passive in ETFs was the way to be. Active has just gone through the roof, and advisors are putting more and more money into smart portfolios managers' hands. So it's great. This ETF business continues to evolve. Markets continue to evolve. Nate, there's always something for you and I to talk about, right?
All right. So on that note, I want to ask you about two more questions here, and these aren't related to the markets and some of the stuff we're talking about. Not as much, but don't laugh. I did flag one involving ESG. So not crypto, but ESG. I'm sure that'll be a huge surprise to you. But the question was this: the strategies I'm most interested in for my clients over the next 6 months include, and you know, there was a list. People could select more than one, so these percentages aren't going to add up to 100. But 71% said dividend strategies, 42% low volatility strategies, 22% hedge fund like strategies, 10% ESG, and then 5% leverage. Now, I want to ask you about dividend strategies in a minute. Low vol and the hedge fund like strategies make perfect sense to me, you know, why advisors are looking at those in this environment. But ESG strategies aren't looking so popular right now. And this caught my attention, Tom, because I feel like every poll I ever see on ESG shows all sorts of interest and demand, but then we never really see that reflected in actual flows and actual money being put to work. But your poll actually comports with the flows. Money is not pouring in to ESG ETFs. So I don't want to put you on the spot here, but any comments you would offer on ESG in particular?
I think advisors are sincerely interested. However, when push comes to shove and they're making allocations, it's not a top priority right now. And I know, you know, as advisors here in the U.S., we're fair weather fans of ESG. Overseas, especially in Europe, it's ingrained in what you do. It's not that way here. But as you know, as always, when markets come back and people are feeling good about their portfolios again, ESG, I think, will start, you know, seeing flows. But right now, as you point out, Nate, the flows support that it's not a big interest to advisors today.
Were you surprised? I noted the dividend strategies, 71%. That jumped out at me. I was surprised that dividend strategies were still so popular, only because, you know, look, you look last year with rising rates, people didn't want to stand in front of that rising rate freight train on the fixed income side. So they looked to dividend strategies for income. And I know depending upon the type of dividend strategy you're looking at, maybe that's a more of a quality or value tilt, which hasn't performed well this year. But if you think the environment may change, maybe we do get a recession, perhaps that's a good place to be. But I was surprised by the level of interest there. Did that surprise you at all?
Yeah, well, if we happen to see rates come down a year from now, that means those the dividend yields are going to be more competitive with current rates. And at the same time, if you've got that equity kicker because you feel like all the inflationary headwind has been taken off the table, and we actually are seeing valuations that are more in line and you know, better for clients these days, it makes sense. And then back to the diversification play. That's really important too. So look, you now can buy dividend-oriented stocks for a lot cheaper than you could a couple years ago. And advisors are taking advantage of it as they're trying to spread out where they get their yield.
Yeah, and the other thing here too is, I guess if you look at flows, we are still seeing ETFs like SEHD taking money, and an ETF like CALS comes to mind, or even JEPI, which isn't necessarily a dividend strategy, but it's an income strategy. So, you know, JEPI continues to just vacuum up cash. So, hey, clearly there's still interest there.
Those options overlay strategies are booming, and we may be just getting started. It's almost an asset class into themselves, Nate. I know we could spend a whole show on that, but boy, they're really seeing a lot of flows, and the folks are doing a good job instituting those strategies. It's a nice option to consider too.
Yeah, I believe I just saw Goldman Sachs filed for some products there as well. So I think you're right. We're going to continue to see a boom in those, you know, income option-oriented strategies. All right, Tom, just a couple of minutes left. The last polling question I selected here covered what I thought was an interesting topic and one that I really haven't discussed much on this podcast. So let me read the question here. The question was, have you ever used an ETF strategy firm to assist in reaching your clients' investment needs? 23% said yes, 59% said no, and then 18% said I'm still evaluating my options. And you can talk about those results if you want, but I thought it might be interesting. You know, who are some ETF strategy firms that come to mind for you? And maybe, you know, how do you see advisors working with those firms? Again, this just isn't a topic I've covered much.
Yeah, well, there are a lot. And again, very quickly, ETF strategists are financial advisors who now just don't serve individual investors, but they also serve other financial advisors. We actually have an ETF strategist channel on ETF Trends and ETF Database, where some of the top ETF strategists in the country actually make their portfolios available for financial advisors or individual investors as well. With the idea, kind of back to the active versus passive, Nate, a lot of them have portfolios, but they're not just dyed-in-the-wool asset allocation strategies. They're actually active strategies that take advantage of opportunities in the market or avoid areas that may be underperforming or challenged based on what's going on in the markets and economies. So this is another option that's gotten more popular as people have moved away from passive based on what's going on in the marketplace and going on in the economy. So there's a whole slew. If you're interested, go to the ETF Strategist channel at Vettify, and you can find out not only about the profile of these strategists, but also they can talk about their individual strategies, and there's information there. So I'm glad you brought that up, because it really is a great option.
Yeah, and I think the high level pitch or value add here is that if you're an advisor, I think, you know, most advisors have some level of investment expertise, but maybe constructing portfolios isn't your core expertise, and you want to spend your time on, you know, adding value to your clients outside of just the portfolio management piece. This is an easy way, right? You find the right ETF strategist to partner with and leverage their expertise, leverage their models, and focus on the client relationship. I mean, I think in a nutshell, that's what this comes back to. But maybe we should do a segment on that in the future, Tom. We're going to have to leave it there. You know, I always love going through this polling data. Excellent stuff this week. Thank you for joining me.
Thanks so much, Nate. Take care.
That was Tom Lydon, Vice Chairman of Vettify.